Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, let's rock and roll. Welcome to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It is Saturday, March the 6th, and the dawn of a new spring is beginning to come around. And to help me usher in this new season, for at least the first hour, Keith Alexander. Keith, happy March. It was February the last time we talked.
Yeah, you're right.
February the last time we talked on the radio.
A new month. Well, this is the first day of our new month, so I'm going to say it and hope that we have good luck all month long.
It's been a great, great year so far, calendar year 2010 for the cesspool. I tell you, I really think we have been at the top of our game with regard to bringing analysis and commentary to the issues most important to our people, and we've had some great guests to help us do that, and we've got some great guests tonight, including Dr. Greg Johnson, editor of the Occidental Quarterly, and a little bit later, Reverend Ted Pike. We're going to be talking movies with Greg and hate crimes with Ted, and we look forward to getting to all that. But before we get into anything, let me remind you, as I do at the beginning of every show, that you are listening to The Political Cesspool on AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee. That's our flagship station, but not our only station by any means, as we're going out to the AM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, libertynewsradio.com, and our official internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Keith, last week, I tell you, was a highly impassioned program, a very intense show, and it elicited emails from literally all over the world. And we're going to be revisiting some of the fare that we discussed last week, most particularly the scandal. I don't know if you want to call it a scandal, the cultural genocide, that would be a better way of putting it, that is taking place at the campus of Ole Miss in Oxford. We are going to revisit that to an extent a little bit later on in this hour. But first, I wanted Keith to start off tonight's show, since last week's program was so serious, and tonight's show will be serious too, but I at least want to start off the first segment, if nothing else, with news from the lighter side. And you've heard the old African proverb, Keith, it takes a village to raise a child. And of course, when parents can't be bothered to raise their own kids, somebody's got to do it. And if you're in a pinch, you don't even need a village. A Chuck E. Cheese will do just fine. And that's a story that comes from our blog this week. If you've been checking it at thepoliticalcesspool.org, yes, indeed, the mother of a two-year-old who was apparently abandoned at a Chuck E. Cheese pizza restaurant on Saturday night, has contacted the police. The mother finally contacted the police, saying she forgot about her kid a few days prior. Police were talking to the mother to figure out what transpired and led up to this. An officer said it looks like it may be miscommunication, and it goes on to say that the child in question, an African-American female, 2 years old, was found at about 10:30 p.m. one evening at a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. And, of course, she wasn't old enough to know where she lives or who had to contact her parents. But finally, the mother of this child had the good sense to call the police again some days later. So, Keith, you know, I bring that up because we have been closely monitoring here at the Political Cesspool the epic saga of Chuck E. Cheese. I had posted a, you know, Chuck E. Cheese, where a kid can be a kid until he gets shot. We've been covering a brawl that happened in a minority area here in Memphis, and since then it's come to our attention that these brawls in the ghetto are quite commonplace at Chuck E. Cheese, and then we found this story where apparently they just you know, leave their kids to be raised by the animatronic figures at Chuck E. Cheese. A lot of stuff going on at Chuck E. Cheese, Keith.
You know, some psychologist really needs to do an in-depth study of the attractiveness of Chuck E. Cheese to the black mind or the black lifestyle or something, because I've been following these blog entries that you've been putting on the blog about, you know, various brawls and uproars and shootouts at the Chuck E. Cheese Corral over the past couple of weeks. And I've concluded that Chuck E. Cheese must be the epicenter of the racial revolution in America now. If you want to understand what's going on racially in America. If you want to find out what the results are of the interface between black people and their culture and something that's supposed to be this benign, child-friendly manifestation of white culture called Chuck E. Cheese, then you've got to be at Chuck E. Cheese. In fact, we were talking about this the other day when Mike Broadwell happened to pass through town. It was just an incredible thing that we saw of, you know, I think that the best thing that could happen, the best thing, you know, if you want to have all the fun of the Compton Party that, you know, has been publicized at the University of California in San Diego, but to completely eliminate the risk of politically incorrect fallout like befell the students at the Compton Party at the University of California at San Diego, just post up, hang out at a Chuck E. Cheese, preferably behind bulletproof glass, and just wait for the fireworks to begin, James. What do you think?
No, absolutely. And, you know, people would say, well, you can't ridicule this behavior because that's only going to encourage more of it. Well, behavior like this ought to be ridiculed, and we ought not be treating these situations with kid gloves, afraid to offend the sensibilities of these people because, you know, their behavior is a joke. Their behavior is an absolute joke, and when it's not, you know, fitting to be mocked, it's fitting to be absolutely frightened of because it is so, in some cases, animalistic, as we were talking about a situation that happened in Tulsa. I put that on the blog. And by the way, folks, you got to check out the blog.
Well, what it shows, James, is this. You know what Grandma used to say, you can dress them up, but you can't take them to town. You apparently can't take these people to Disney World, or you can't take them to Chuck E. Cheese. You can't take them to Mr. Roberts' neighborhood without them breaking out into some type of violent shootout or whatnot, or brawl. Man, what a commentary on of black America it is.
Well, and you know, and I wish it wasn't the way that it is. And sometimes, unfortunately, stereotypes are true. And I'm all for, you know, but what they should be doing, Keith, is rather than blaming European Americans for all of their problems in life and all of the failures of their culture, they need to be cleaning their own house. They need to be focusing on situations like in Tulsa, and I was mentioning just a moment ago, I put this on the blog, Life is Cheap in North Tulsa, and the blog is reaching near record numbers this week, ladies and gentlemen. You really need to check it out. It's really been on fire at thepoliticalcesspool.org, but unfortunately, in North Tulsa, at a place called the Chicken Hut, it's a fast food restaurant similar to KFC, a black gentleman apparently was shot, and not only did no one in the restaurant do anything to help him, when the emergency medical technicians arrived on the scene to try to revive the man, they couldn't get through the crowd because they were too busy trying to get their chicken. Now, that sounds like some sort of a joke or some sort of a caricature, but this is according to official police reports that came from the scene. So, you know, unfortunately, again, as I say, Keith, these folks need to be focusing on the problems that are manifesting themselves in their own communities rather than blaming James Edwards and Keith Alexander for their lot in life. I am all for them raising themselves up if it is possible, and I think that's what they need to be addressing rather than apparition of racism that they say is behind every corner. It doesn't exist at all unless it is racist to point out facts and use stories to prove a point that there is a cultural gap there. I don't know if it can be bridged, but they need to be focusing on bridging it rather than blaming us for things like this, because certainly there's nothing that has been done to them that, no. I mean, it's inhumane for people not to assist a man who's just been shot, or at least clear a room, call the police. But
well, what it points out, James,
you read that story.
Yeah. What it points out is this total lack of altruism. You notice that when there's a disaster in the black community or a predominantly black community like Hurricane Katrina in predominantly black New Orleans or the earthquake in predominantly black Haiti, who comes to the rescue? Who comes with actual aid? Who actually sends people there to relieve the suffering of the people? They don't come from Africa. They don't come from Asia. They don't come from the Middle East. They don't come from South America. Where they come from are the white nations of the world. The United States, Canada, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, places like this. Now, you know, but we're too we're led to believe by the cultural left that white people are the cancer of human history, as Susan Sontag, the Jewish pundit, said back in the 60s, when actually the proof shows that we're the blessing of the world, and quite frankly the curse of the world is when a neighborhood, for example, turns black. That's when the crime spikes up. That's when the criminal behavior and the immoral behavior goes through the roof. That's when the property values drop. That's when the upkeep of the neighborhood falls in the toilet.
Keith, we'll be right back. Got to take a break. Hold it right there. We'll pick up in a moment.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show. You know, a lot of times we are bringing to your attention news articles that you just won't hear on any other radio program but ours. And because of that, we always, always provide you with corroborating links to prove that what we're saying is, in fact, true, because, again, it's just so bizarre. I wanted to provide reference to that story that we just brought to your attention from North Tulsa. The man was shot to death at the Chicken Hut fast food shack in a black neighborhood, and out of 100 or so witnesses, only one of them called 911, and all but one of them are insisting that they didn't see anything. Even worse, customer after customer stepped over the victim to get their fried chicken, and as I said, EMT workers had to fight off the hungry patrons in order to even reach the dying man. Well, here is the story itself from Channel 6 News in Tulsa, one of the network affiliates, and I read now from their official statement. Tulsa police say out of numerous potential witnesses, only one person had any information to offer in a shooting overnight at the Chicken Hut restaurant at 1500 East Apache Street. It says that when EMT personnel arrived, they found the victim lying on the ground in front of the restaurant's pickup window. He had been shot multiple times. They had a difficult time getting to the man through the crowd of people, and no one was trying to help the injured man. So, again, Keith, as we're saying, these are issues that I think, and these issues, unfortunately, are relatively commonplace. These are the issues that people read about and lead them to their decisions to perhaps stay away from minority neighborhoods. That is not our fault. That is not our fault.
Look, if you didn't segregate yourself from black neighborhoods and refuse to live in them, if there were not such a phenomenon as white flight, the people you would be reading about being shot and killed on the police blotter would be other white people and possibly your own family. So consequently, anybody that has any instincts for self-preservation wants to move from that. In fact, what's the first thing that a black person that achieves some type of financial success in life does? He promptly moves out of the ghetto. This is indicative of this lack of altruism, this lack of civic-mindedness that marks the black community. In the white community, I doubt that you would have customers stepping over the injured person who's sitting there gasping out his last breath on the floor of the restaurant, and I guarantee you everyone would have been trying to call 911. Everybody would have been trying to, administer some type of help, and everyone would have been concerned. It would not have been this ho-hum event that apparently it was at the Chicken Hut in the ghetto in Tulsa.
Well, and that being said, this leads us to a discussion of what a hate crime is, which the definition is so vague, it's practically non-existent. But we do know this much. Only white people
can commit
a hate crime. It's impossible for our minority to commit a hate crime if you ask the...
if you don't believe it, just ask our cultural overlords and the Jewish liberal establishment in America.
Well, there were two situations this week. One is being pursued as a hate crime, one is not. Let me give you the two stories. These have been hot topics on our blog on the website. Two college students in Missouri have been charged with hate crimes for dropping cotton balls on the ground, as if cotton itself is now some sort of a symbol of inherent racism. So, you know, as we keep saying, Keith, conservatives need to just keep singing that stupid Lee Greenwood song. They need to keep watching Fox News and keep going gaga over Sarah Palin. And we'll deserve what's coming to us. You know, this is the story out of Columbia, Missouri. Two Missouri students were arrested for allegedly putting cotton balls outside of a black cultural center there. They didn't put it outside of the white cultural center because there is no such thing. It doesn't exist anywhere in the country.
Never will be, unfortunately.
Right. But the actual charge is tampering, but it's being pursued as a hate crime, which means it'll also be treated as a felony case. The incident, which happened a week ago Friday, has led to public meetings and promises from school officials to find the people responsible, which they did.
Well, I have an update for you,
Jeff. Okay.
They have now fingered the people they think were the perpetrators, and they have charged them with a crime that I have never heard of before, felony littering. Have you ever heard of felony littering before?
Well, not until now. Felony littering, tampering, it's a hate crime because they threw cotton balls. And I'm not talking about cotton out of the field. Cotton from like a woman's makeup drawer, you know, cotton balls that they used to remove makeup outside of the Black Cultural Center. That was it. No one saw them do it. But nevertheless, even if they did, that's being pursued as a felony. They stand to go to the federal penitentiary for throwing cotton balls outside the
It's undoubtedly attracted much more police attention and many more man hours of work than the murder that happened at the Chicken Hut in Tulsa that you read about just before this article.
Yo, get this. You know, I said on the website this week, Keith, that the term minority is now the equivalent of a modern-day title of nobility like Lord or Duke or Earl back in England. And our people are peasants who are never allowed to show disrespect for them in any way.
Yeah, Paul Craig Roberts said something about this some years ago. He said that we now have the reinstitution of feudalism in America because people have differential rights now. People that are members of a recognized minority group now have superior legal rights. They have superior rights to jobs. They have superior rights to federal contracts. They have superior rights both private sector and public sector employment, admission to colleges and universities, and all the other goodies in society. So consequently, what's the difference between the minority of today and the aristocracy of the feudal era? And the answer is, they're equivalent.
Yeah, well,
it's crazy. You know, they're supposedly the poor, oppressed, downtrodden masses, when actually, in terms of legal rights, they're everyone else's overlords.
Well, that's right. And if anything, trumped-up charges like hate crimes charges for dropping a few cotton balls on the sidewalk is going to lead to more self-segregation. You know, I was on CNN for a discussion of self-segregation. Why would any white people want to be around non-whites when the most asinine of actions can put you in federal jail? Well, all right, that's one example. This is the point, though. That's one example of what is a hate crime. Apparently, dropping cotton balls that are used to remove women's makeup is a hate crime if you drop it in an area near where blacks congregate. What is not a hate crime, according to the district attorney in Shenandoah, Pennsylvania, is when a group of Hispanics walk into a bar, attack white people with baseball bats while yelling, "All whites will die tonight." This happened last week in Pennsylvania. A group of Mexicans went into a bar, attacked white patrons with baseball bats while yelling that sentence repeatedly, "All whites will die tonight." And the prosecutor has not filed hate crimes charges in this case. In fact, none of those people have even been arrested, Keith.
Well, it's what no less of an authority than our fearless leader, the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, said. He said that hate crime laws were not intended to protect white people.
That's what he said.
Sense of irony or with any sense of trepidation. He says that as if that's a comment that every reasonable person, every person of goodwill in America and the world would obviously agree with.
Well, that's exactly what he said, Keith. The Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, explained to Congress that white people aren't a protected class under hate crimes law. So essentially, a tale of two stories. It's a hate crime if white people drop cotton balls on the sidewalk near where blacks congregate. It is not a hate crime to attack white people with baseball bats. And, yeah, white people will die tonight. That is not a hate crime. In fact, that's not a crime at all, as of last mentioned. This has not been there have no arrests have been made. All this is on our website, ladies and gentlemen, with links to the original stories. Check it out. It is scary, scary stuff. Check it out. We're going to talk more about it when we come back.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, whether you are tuned in tonight on an AM dial across the country or via the internet, we are glad you have joined us tonight. I'm James. He's Keith. We're taking a lightning-quick approach to some issues that have been brought to our attention this week. We've blogged about them, and now we're talking about them here on this award-winning nationally syndicated radio program. And, Keith, in the last segment, we were talking about what is a hate crime and what is not a hate crime, at least according to a district attorney.
Very puzzling question.
Yeah. So, you know, I got another one for you, and we've been talking about this on the website in between last week's show and tonight's program. Big, big stink over at the University of California at San Diego. So much of a stink, in fact, that a columnist in the area has called for the National Guard to come to San Diego to get to the bottom of this. The school's president said it was the darkest day in the university's history. And what they were talking about was that someone had left a noose hanging in the school library. So naturally, they begin to think it's some neo-Nazi or skinhead. And to be honest with you, I have never met a neo-Nazi or a skinhead. I don't know if they truly exist in this country. They do, of course, call white people who aren't filled with self-hate these terms. But nevertheless, they figured this was a great hate crime that a noose had been left in the library. Well, the FBI comes in, big investigation. And what is it? What turns out? A black student at the university, a girl, college co-ed, turned out to be the culprit.
Why am I not surprised about that, James?
Well, because it's happened. It happens about, you know, 10 times a week in this country.
Well, just think about the Duke lacrosse team rape hoax. In fact, any time that a white person or a white man is accused of raping a black woman, you can bet your bottom dollar that it's a hoax, because according to Jared Taylor's famous book, The Color of Crime, that type of interracial rape, white on black, is the rarest type ever. The instance annually, almost every year, is less than 10, which means it could be zero, because less than 10 doesn't register in national crime statistics.
Well, that's right. You know, there are so many hoaxes that we have covered on this show over the course of the last 6 years since we've been broadcasting. So many, I can't even remember them all. Well, this is the latest, and the reason we're talking about this one is because it got such great attention. The university president saying this was the darkest hour in the history of the university. The FBI is coming in. A local columnist says the National Guard needs to come in and find the evil white racist who left this noose hanging in the library. Well, it turns out to be a black college student who did it. And, of course, she did it.
All of a sudden, the silence was deafening.
Yeah, well, she did it to elicit just such a reaction, an anti-white backlash. Well, once it was discovered that she did it, do you know, ladies and gentlemen, sit down for this. You're not going to believe me, but you're going to have to go to my blog and read about it at thepoliticalcesspool.org. After it was discovered by the authorities that this black woman was the one who left the noose, what she said was, what her excuse was that she had just learned a new rope trick and she forgot that she had left the noose hanging in the library. She discovered this great rope trick, tied the noose, accidentally left it there, didn't bother to come forward after all this, you know, brouhaha started, and then after she got busted, well, you know, I just forgot. And What happened? No indictment, no arrest, no hate crimes charges, just completely flushed down the memory hole. That's it.
And we're going on to the next step. You know, it's amazing that she just claimed negligence on it. You know, if she had claimed, well, I'm the one who did it, and I wanted to get the white people in trouble about it, then she probably would have been congratulated by the administration of the college because her heart was in the right place. And the right place is apparently demonizing white people and oppressing and punishing white people for imaginary crimes.
Well, this is
Orwellian. This is really, you know, the truth is stranger than fiction when you think about this hate crimes bull.
I truly have, in all honesty, never known anyone to pull stunts like this because our people are busy trying to get an education or trying to work and provide for their family. We don't have time to go out and do these things.
We're like Greta Garbo. We just want to be left alone.
Well, that's right. A people who shall dwell alone. That's us. Well, anyway, people like this student here who, you know, left the noose in the library. These are the kinds of people that the GOP is desperately trying to make inroads with. You know, for decades, Keith, the Republican Party has been seeking to bridge the gap to the black community, even going so far as to elect a black man, Michael Steele, to run their party, who, by the way, Michael Steele is here in Memphis tonight speaking at a local Republican gathering. How sick is that? Anyway, so the Republican Party gets Michael Steele to pretend to be their chairman, even though we all know he voted for Obama. And it's been a mystery to me, though, to be frank, why blacks don't vote GOP, as they would seem to be a perfect fit with the party's values. Many blacks are entrepreneurs selling drugs and other merchandise on the street corners, and they take a very dim view of taxes and government regulations. Most blacks possess strong family values, too. Many of them sire half a dozen or more children before they're 21. And as for guns, inner-city blacks know full well that our founding fathers didn't put the Second Amendment in there for hunters. They own lots of guns, and they're not afraid to use them. But even with all that being true, the GOP outreach hasn't borne much fruit. But finally, though, Keith, we finally found an example of where Michael Steele's plan in bringing a hip-hop flavor, quote-unquote, to the GOP is beginning to work. Again, folks, you got to check out the blog and read this story at thepoliticalcesspool.org. This is news in from Chicago. Two men are being held in a police custody in Chicago this week for a mid-afternoon shooting that occurred uptown on Thursday that left a Southside woman wounded. The news story reads that at about 4:15 p.m., six gunshots were fired during the busy afternoon commute at Wilson and Broadway. Witnesses told police that a man holding a gun at his side approached a small crowd of men and began firing at them. Here's where the plot thickens. The men in custody are described by police as members of the gang, the Conservative Vice Lords.
Now, that takes a prize there, I tell you.
When did the Vice Lords
become conservative? I guess Michael Steele's outreach is finally bearing fruit.
If only Ronald Reagan, Keith, could have lived long enough to see this day. Now, police aren't sure what sparked the shooting, although they believe it may have been part of a dispute over same-sex marriage. See, that's another issue in which the blacks agree with the GOP. Well, at least some GOPers, not GOPers like McCain or his lesbian daughter or Dick Cheney and his lesbian daughter. But, the conservative vice lords up there in Chicago, the black gang, they seemingly have a tendency to feud with Chicago's notoriously left-liberal white gangs, the almighty Gaylords.
And we're not kidding, folks. Look that up. Click the link on the blog for the almighty Gaylords. There is actually such an organization.
And then, you know, there's, of course, I had to add a little tongue-in-cheek to the commentary there. And this is the only part that is an exaggeration. I said the next thing we're going to hear about is that there's a black conservative gang feuding also with the conservative vice lords named the Black Disciples of Milton Friedman. That was
just
conjecture.
They're arguing over marginal tax rates, yeah.
Yeah. They're gonna get into disagreement over marginal tax rate. I tell you, the issues that we cover on this show, you couldn't write. I mean, the best.
I know, you can't make this stuff up, people. I swear that there are, you know, this is an article from a Chicago newspaper.
Yeah,
and
so,
if you can believe this, you know, talk about the truth being stranger than fiction. You know, I just, you know, getting back to planet Earth here, you know, in leaving the doings in Chicago behind, when is the Republican Party going to stop hating on their base? You know, they've hated on their base so long that their base is beginning to learn how to hate back. And when that happens, the Republicans are a total lost cause. They are going to be worthless to themselves and everyone else. You know, it's remarkable that in the last election where there was a black Democratic candidate, the two most prominent black Republicans, J.C. Watts and Colin Powell, both turned traitor and supported the Democratic candidate, which shows that their tribal loyalties far exceed any ideological commitment they have.
Well, Keith, the thing is, the Republican Party, based upon their own actions, situations like this, should never compete again on a national level. They should never be a threat to win the national the presidency. The only reason they could be is because the Democrats are just such a copy, such a carbon copy of outright communist and Marxist ethos that the Republicans still, to some people, not to me, but to some people, they look good in comparison.
Well, in Memphis, you know what I said the other week? I said that in Shelby County in Memphis, which is where Memphis is, in Shelby County, Tennessee, we have two parties. We have the Democrats for black liberals, and we have the Republicans for white liberals.
That's it. That's really the difference.
And nobody for conservatives.
No one for conservatives, at least not yet. Check out the American Third Position. We'll be back with more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, a couple of quick announcements here, ladies and gentlemen. Coming up later, I hope you've enjoyed the show so far tonight. It has been a fast-paced, action-filled adventure, and we still got 2 hours to go. And when we get there, coming up a little bit later, we're going to have Dr. Greg Johnson of the Occidental Quarterly. He's going to be on to provide us with a movie review in advance of tomorrow night's Oscar presentation in Hollywood. So Greg Johnson's on in the second hour to talk about movies, and in the third hour, Reverend Ted Pike with more on hate crimes. Also, speaking of movies and speaking of Hollywood, I received a call earlier in the week, a couple of days ago, from Hutton Gibson, Mel Gibson's dad. We were mentioning the fact that it has been a banner year thus far in the cesspool, and there's going to be many more surprises for you to come this year. We've got big plans in store as the calendar continues to peel off the months. But Hutton Gibson called, and he has graciously offered books, autographed books from his website. The title of the book is The Enemy is Still Here. It focuses on leftist infiltration of the church, which is Hutton Gibson's signature issue. Well, if you want to come into possession of an autographed copy of Hutton Gibson's book, all you got to do is take advantage of our special offer. Anyone who donates $100 to the Political Cesspool before March 31st, you got to do it this month, Hutton Gibson will send you an autographed copy of his book as a reward. So it's great, Keith, to be able to work with people like Hutton Gibson. If you judge us by the friends we keep and the enemies we keep, I think we're going to come out ahead every time, and we're most grateful to Hutton Gibson for extending that courtesy to us. So if you want to take advantage, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org. $100 donation gets you a free autographed copy of Hutton Gibson's book, and we'll be promoting that through the end of the month. Now, big topic last week was the cultural genocide at Ole Miss. As I said, we got emails truly from all over the world as a result of our very impassioned commentary last week. And Keith, I want to tell you, I got an email from a listener, a regular listener, from Berlin, Germany. All the way from Berlin, got an email that reads, "Many thanks for your report on the going on at Ole Miss. I share your sentiments completely. It all started with the attack on the Confederate flag, which is a symbol of courage and heroism. I am very proud that my ancestor fought for nearly the entire war as a member of Scott's 1st Louisiana Cavalry. Keep up the good work." And that comes, Keith, from a listener in Berlin. What was it about that segment that got people so enthused or outraged?
I tell you what, it's really serendipity that we got an email from Berlin, because I was listening to an old archive broadcast we had back in January of 08, in which you and I interviewed Paul Gottfried. I was doing that this afternoon. And what I heard was him talking about how the left has decided there are two groups that they hate more than any other, and they are Germans and Southern white Gentiles. And Sam Francis wrote about this, too. He wrote an article called Abolishing America. This was back years ago. He said, Abolishing America continued. Confederate equals Nazi. And we, Germans and Southern white Gentiles, have been experiencing the same type of demonization in which our right to live is basically being questioned by the liberal establishment in America. Being called a Nazi is a blood libel against Germans. Being a Confederate or having Confederate sympathies or Confederate respect for the Confederate history of the southern part of the United States is a blood libel against southern whites. Now, what really is happening at Ole Miss is that Ole Miss, out of all of the locales in the South, out of all the colleges that were integrated, many at the point of a bayonet, like they did at Alabama. Remember when George Wallace stood in the door of the school? Southern Mississippi had the same thing. Memphis State had a very similar experience. All of these schools, nobody went gently into the good night, really. Everybody at least made a gesture of standing up to this obvious federal usurpation of an issue that has typically and, you know, for a time in memoriam been considered a local state matter at the most, and really a local matter, which is public education. The reason that Gottfried said we do this is two. He said self-hatred and moral arrogance. Self-hatred, we've internalized this hatred that's been directed against Germans regarding their Nazi background or the fact that there is a Nazi interlude in their history, and white Southerners because there was a Confederate interlude in their history, and moral arrogance. In other words, the modern generation is encouraged to think that they are morally superior to their ancestors, whether those ancestors were German or Southern white Gentiles. Leanne Toohey, who we've mentioned before when we were discussing the Blind Side movie and book in earlier episodes of the Political Cesspool this year, is a perfect example. She attacked her own father, who was a U.S. Marshal, her maiden name was Robbins, as being a virulent racist. Now, we were asking at the time, what did he do to deserve this type of vituperation from his the apple of his eye, his little girl? Well, did he ride shotgun with Byron Della Beckwith? Was he bombing churches? Was he, you know, a Klansman? None of those things, of course. What he did was, when they instituted the busing order in Memphis, Tennessee, he dared to take his daughter out of public school, like 90% of the other white population in Memphis at the time, and put her in a private segregation academy. And what segregation academy did he send her to? Why, none other than Briarcrest Baptist School, which has now become Briarcrest Christian Academy, which is the school where James went, and furthermore, where Leanne Toohey sent her own two biological children and her adopted black 350-pound, 6'5", what a coincidence, he plays football too, adopted black son, Michael Orr. So she's done, she apparently considers her father a complete, you know, immoral, horrible person.
Degenerate, right? Yeah.
Because he sent her to the same place she sends her children. Now, you know, explain that one to me. That is, you know, Ole Miss is a focus because we have at Ole Miss Confederate symbols. We have the name Rebels. We had the Confederate flag. We played Dixie at football games and other athletic contests. But, you know, let's draw the curtain back and just think about what has happened since that fateful day in 1962 when federal marshals enrolled James Meredith as a student at Ole Miss at the point of a bayonet, which caused widespread rioting in Oxford. Well, Ole Miss football fans, Ole Miss and football are inextricably linked, because back in those days, Ole Miss was the premier football program in the Southeastern Conference. They were always right at the top of the ratings. They beat everybody, including Alabama back then. And what happened was, if you look back, you know, what they're trying to tell people now is that we've got to get rid of these Confederate symbols because it hurts our recruiting. Well, Ole Miss people, wake up. The last time you had a truly dominant team was in 1970, Archie Manning's junior year. That's the last time that Ole Miss went to the Sugar Bowl, which is kind of the prize of Southern football teams. That's where they all strive to go. And back in 1970, when that happened, Ole Miss and its football team, the Ole Miss football team was entirely white, not one black person on it. The Southeastern Conference did not integrate until a year or two later after that. And since then, Ole Miss's football program has quite frankly gone in the toilet, just like Ole Miss's reputation for being a top college in the South as a public institution. It used to be, as Bill Rowland said in last week's segment on this, the Harvard of the South. Now it is in second place even in the state of Mississippi. Mississippi State University, which used to be derided by Ole Miss people as a cow college. They said that at Ole Miss we study culture, at Mississippi State we study agriculture. Well, now Mississippi State has an aggregate higher ACT for its admitting class than Ole Miss. That's something unprecedented in history. Meanwhile, the Ole Miss administration keeps trying to trumpet their progress, but their progress is dragging them down to the bottom, James.
Well, Keith, you were talking about something that's unprecedented. Let me tell you about something that is precedented. In fact, it happens every week. We're out of time. We're out of time for this hour, and I hate to cut it short, but because you were on quite a roll there with another excellent commentary. We'll just have to pick it up next week. And, Keith, thank you for your service this evening. Still 2 hours to come, ladies and gentlemen, in the program tonight. Keith, will see you next week when we come back, and I'll see you right after the commercial break. Don't change that dial. Two more hours forthcoming in the Political Cesspool tonight. I'm your host, James Edwards. Check out our website during the commercial break, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and we'll see you right after this.
Stay tuned. Hour number two of The Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
Harv leaped to his feet and says, something's got a hold on me. Yow! The day the squirrel went berserk in the First Baptist Church in that sleepy little town of Pascagoula. It was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. Jumping pews and shouting, hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the amen.